The existence of love, you could say, is predicated on the existence of freedom and the ability to choose, to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Love by nature also risks contempt.
Yeah.
It risks rejection,
mm-hmm.
but it can't exist without that potential.
Right. Yep.
Was God being oppressive by creating the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and commanding them not to eat it? Or would it have been more oppressive for him to not make that tree and not create a context for them to live where they had the ability to choose?
Right. Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Making History. My name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we are the Hesses. And we are excited to be back.
Yes, we are.
For another episode.
Another one.
On this episode, we are going to continue the conversation on what causes our kids to freely and willingly offer us their attention, their respect, and their cooperation. And this time, we're going to be taking more of a biblical approach as we explore the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden and why the existence of both the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil can help us understand God's nature and methods of, as a father and what that means for us as parents.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
It is going to be good. First, just in case anybody is joining us for the first time, maybe they weren't here for the last episode, or just in case anybody listened to the last episode and it's been a whole week and they want a bit of a refresher.
Yeah.
Let's recap what we talked about very briefly in our last episode. Kids are born with what is called a counter will. And of course, we have that too. Mm-hmm. We were once kids. And
right.
That's just something that people have.
Still in there.
But kids are born with what's called a counter will. And that basically means that they have this inherent automatic resistance to being forced or being controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So we mentioned this last week that you don't have to have a PhD. You don't have to be a developmental psychologist to know that kids don't like being forced or controlled.
Yep. They like to push back every chance they get.
Yep. So this presents a problem, or really two problems, for parents whose primary aim, you could say, is to have obedient kids. Mm. Now, if you're listening to this, we are not against having kids who are obedient.
No, not at all.
But if you're new here, we're going to explain to you why obedience is much better as the outcome. I'll say the natural outcome mm-hmm. of connection
yep.
than it is as the goal itself. Because when our goal as parents is to have obedient kids, then we will easily justify methods that include things like control,
mm-hmm.
fear, threats, anger,
manipulation.
Intimidation, yep, manipulation, yeah. all that. And that will go wrong in one of two ways. Either if you're like our second born and you are a little bit more of the strong-willed type, it will trigger that kid's counter will. And they'll become highly resistant, which parents often interpret as being bad or being rebellious,
yep.
not understanding that kids are actually doing what they're designed to do in that scenario. But it'll trigger their counter will. They'll become highly resistant, to which the parents will likely work harder to find ways to force and control and intimidate their kids. Which, again, is just this back and forth where
reinforces that same behavior
yes.
at an even more intense level, most likely.
Yes, and it just creates this cycle of, like, power struggles.
Yeah.
And so that can happen. Or on the other hand, maybe you have a kid who is a little less resistant in their personality. Maybe mm-hmm. like our firstborn, Nora, who is a little more agreeable.
Yeah.
And maybe we could get some short-term results from her in the form of compliance
mm-hmm.
by either offering her bribes or by threatening to punish her. Now, here's the thing. Parents who use bribes and threats to get their kids to do what they want often fail to realize that whatever behavior exists as a product of coercion is not likely to exist intrinsically, voluntarily, or
right.
spontaneously.
Yep.
So an example we can use to talk about this, let's use the example of like getting kids to clean their room. Mm-hmm. One way we could do that is by offering a bribe. Hey, if you clean your room, I'll give you whatever, mm-hmm. whatever it is. Or you could go the other route where you threaten to punish. Mm-hmm. If you don't clean your room, I will
right.
fill in the blank.
Yep.
Either of those may work temporarily. You may get some short-term results. Yeah. And because kids have potential to be moved by applying that kind of leverage, parents sometimes fall into the trap of thinking that they're successful.
Right. Yeah. Oh, this is actually working. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at this.
Exactly. Because yep. if your goal is to have obedient kids or compliant kids, and your bribes and your punishments work to move them in the direction of compliance, mm-hmm. you will feel successful and you'll yep. feel justified in your methods. But again, any behavior that exists as a product of coercion, whether like on the good side, like rewards and bribes, yeah. or the bad side of threats and anger and fear and all that, mm-hmm. Any behavior that exists because of those things isn't going to exist naturally in your right. kids. So a question we could ask ourselves is the goal in this scenario for us, is the goal to have a clean room, or is the goal to instill a value in our kids for taking care of their space, taking care of their things,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and just having a level of excellence?
Right. Yeah. Valuing the things that they have. So they're learning to take care of what they've been given rather than taking advantage of what they've been given.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times when parents enter into these kind of power struggles with their kids, mm-hmm. because their kids are resistant to their force and their control, parents typically perceive that as disrespect, mm-hmm. which I get.
Yeah.
I get when a kid just outright tells you no.
Right.
That feels very disrespectful. Yeah. Doesn't feel good.
Yep.
Nobody likes that feeling. Mm-hmm. So I totally get how this cycle only like further goes yeah. further, and it only deepens.
Right. Escalates.
Yeah. So another question we can ask as parents, just on the topic of respect, and this is very similar to the question I just posed, is my goal as a dad, we'll say, is it to feel respected by my kids, or is my goal to instill a value for respect in mm. my kids?
Yeah.
And those are actually two different things, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
So if my goal is to feel respected by my kids, again, I will feel very justified in doing whatever I need to do,
yeah,
making whatever threats I need to make
mm-hmm.
to achieve whatever compliance looks like so yep. that I have that feeling of, oh, my kids respect me.
Mm-hmm. Which that I feel like feeling,
yes.
I feel like feeling.
Yes.
Is the key word there, because are you actually getting genuine respect in those situations?
Right.
No.
No.
They're just doing what they need yes. to do to get you to leave them alone.
They are surviving me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That's totally different.
Yep.
But if my goal as a dad is to teach my kids the value of respect
mm-hmm.
and help them become the type of people that freely offer their respect to yeah. other people, then I have something that needs to shift in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I want my kids to become the type of people who respect others, I first have to be the type of person who models for them what respect looks like.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't look like angry threats. It doesn't look like yelling. It doesn't right. look like any of that.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Whatever behavior you model to your kids.
Yes.
is going to come right back to you. And it yep. doesn't, it's not just us modeling respect for other people mm-hmm. outside the home. It also pertains to the kids. I think that's where a lot of miscommunication or misinterpretation happens. It's like, well, yeah I'm modeling respect for these people, like at work, at church, mm-hmm. our neighbors, whatever it is. But if that doesn't carry or start in your home,
yeah,
even better,
mm-hmm.
then you're not showing them that they are valuable enough and worthy of your respect. And so they're like, yeah. well, I guess I don't matter enough. Like, sure, you're giving it to these people, but if you're not going to give it to me, then why would I give it to you?
Right.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I think that a lot of the problems that parents face in their day-to-day lives with their kids could be solved by shifting their goal mm-hmm. from having obedient kids to having a strong connection and attachment to their kids.
Yeah.
because it is in the context of a healthy relationship and a strong connection that kids become more cooperative, they become more respectful. And again, that is because if you are working harder on your relationship than you are on figuring out how to force your kids to do what you want them to do, then you are probably naturally becoming a more respectful person.
Yeah.
You're becoming the type of person that their kid, or that your kid wants to cooperate with.
Right.
Wants to give you their attention.
Yep. You're seeking to work together.
Yes.
Rather than just to be a dictator of your home and make everything go the way that you want it, when you want it, how you want it.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So a lot of these ideas, now these are not just our ideas. You can find a lot of this. There's so much literature just on like attachment.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of developmental psychologists are very interested in exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I also happen to think that we can find this in the Bible.
Oh, do tell.
So let's go to the Garden of Eden.
All right.
Way back in Genesis.
Way back.
In that story, Adam and Eve are living in this perfect garden that God created for them, and he has given them delegated authority, and he wants them to be his representatives to the rest of creation on his behalf and to work with him on making the rest of the world look like, basically look like a perfect paradise.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's so much in Genesis that is like, it's not an easy book to unpack.
Right, yeah.
It is so...
lots of details and things to dig into. Well,
so by the time it was written by Moses, which he's considered a very ancient person to us.
Yeah.
That's ancient history. Well, the stories that he wrote about in Genesis were already ancient history to him. So we're talking about things that are so, so, so far removed from our current cultural context.
Right.
That it's hard to understand what exactly was trying to be said in a lot of these stories.
Yeah.
But for the sake of simplicity, I do think that there are some things that we can draw out from early on in Genesis that relates to everything we've been talking about parenting.
Yep.
So Adam and Eve are in this garden, and there are two well-known trees in the garden. There's the tree of life. There's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Yep.
Now, when you read that story, it could be really easy to think, why did they both have to be there?
Right.
So the Bible is very clear that both trees are being are described as being in the midst of the garden.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they were both equally as accessible.
Yeah.
And that's actually a really important point that we'll come back to in a minute. Mm-hmm. It's really important that both the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life were accessible to Adam and Eve.
Yep.
To understand the purpose of the trees, especially the purpose of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, I think we first have to step back and understand the purpose of Adam and Eve. Like, why did they exist?
Sure.
Why did God create them? Mm-hmm. What was he looking for? And again, there are a couple of different ways to answer that. Even in that, like, kind of throughout scripture, we see this idea, or there's this terminology of like a royal priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And that Adam and Eve were meant to be, like I already said, they were meant to be God's representatives to creation, but that they were meant to rule and reign here with him on the earth.
Yeah.
But I think we could get even a little more simple than that. And I think we could just say, like, bottom line, I think what the Lord was looking for was to have a relationship with people.
Mm-hmm.
So God being three in one, I don't want to go too far into like Trinitarian theology, but there is this concept that like the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit had existed in this perfect unity of sharing and loving. And I think that one of the reasons, if not the main reason, Adam and Eve were created was to have somebody else to share in that.
Mm.
So God was looking for somebody to love and to be loved by.
Mm-hmm.
So he creates Adam in this garden, and he creates Eve. And the thing we need to consider about relationships in general is that if a relationship is going to be healthy, it needs a couple things. Primarily, it needs love.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have a healthy relationship with anybody, there has to be the presence of love in that relationship. So by nature, relationships will thrive if they have love. And love by nature requires a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So the existence of love, you could say, is predicated on the existence of freedom and the ability to choose, to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam and Eve are there in this garden, and God gives them this whole garden, and he says, you can eat of any tree in the garden, don't eat from that one.
Right.
So now there's a rule to follow.
Yep.
The serpent comes along, and he starts telling Eve that God is a liar, and he paints this picture that God must be some kind of like oppressor.
Mm-hmm.
He is oppressing you guys.
Right.
He just doesn't want
really
you.
Tell you not
yes.
To do this?
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he must be the worst,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And so he paints this picture that God must be an oppressor because he gave them a rule to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to ask the question, was God being oppressive by creating the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and commanding them not to eat it? Or would it have been more oppressive for him to not make that tree and not create a context for them to live where they had the ability to choose?
Right. Yeah.
Which that sounds way more oppressive to me.
Absolutely.
Because to me, oppression sounds like the removal of options,
mm-hmm.
the removal of the ability to make a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, even if you put it in the context of like now, like if somebody just makes a choice for you,
yes.
that feels really like yeah. really belittling and really like controlling. You're like, wait a minute. You didn't even give me the option.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like how many times has that happened where, I don't know, we've done this before and it's been done to us, but
yeah.
where somebody was like, oh, like I was going to invite you to this thing, but like, I know you've got a lot going on. So I didn't want you to feel
right.
pressured.
You've got kids, you've got all these
yeah.
things that you're doing.
It's like that feeling of somebody else making your choices for you.
Yeah. You feel like they think you're incapable
yes.
of making a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very limiting. It's very like restricting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that wasn't the type of experience the Lord was wanting for Adam and Eve
yeah.
because he was looking for a relationship with them. Healthy relationships need love. Love requires the ability to choose.
Yes.
And so he needed to create them in the context of having a will and having freedom to choose.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in doing that, like the thing about love is love by nature also risks contempt.
Yeah.
It risks rejection,
mm-hmm.
but it can't exist without that potential.
Right. Yep, because if you can't choose to not choose somebody,
yeah.
then you can't choose to choose them either because you don't have the choice to not choose them. And so like when you say it like that, it sounds so confusing. But I mean,
yeah.
if you eliminate the negative option, then you're only left with one option.
Yeah.
And so there's no choice there. It's just, here's your choice.
Yes.
Do this.
Yeah. And what you're describing is control.
Yeah.
So the more you remove somebody's ability to choose, the more you control, the more control you have over
mm-hmm.
them.
Yep.
And I don't believe there's so much debate about this. It gets especially complex when you start like weighing the tension between God's sovereignty and the human will.
Mm.
Those two things, they both exist. They exist perfectly somehow. I don't think we're capable of fully understanding how they do.
Right.
But what I do know for sure is that people have a will. We have the ability and the capacity to choose,
mm-hmm.
which the will, I think by definition, is our capacity to choose, to initiate, and to create.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely essential that we have a will.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I mean, to create people that have a will and to risk their contempt and to risk their rejection
mm-hmm.
is really amazing.
Yeah.
Because it's only when we are free to choose contempt that we're free to choose love.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have one without the other.
Right.
It's both or it's neither.
Mm-hmm.
Because love is never the product of control.
Right.
You can't make somebody love you
mm-hmm.
by definition. You can't. Love ceases to exist in the
yeah.
context of control.
Yep.
And now we can kind of bring this back to the context of parenting.
Mm-hmm.
That, okay, we see that God as a father, he wanted us to have the freedom to make a choice, and he wanted us to love him, but he teaches us how to love by loving us.
Mm-hmm.
For us as parents, we need to find a way to let our kids experience the freedom to make a choice.
Yeah.
So that looks like removing control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, freedom to make a choice, I don't want anyone listening to this to think that we're saying that we, that our kids are both free or able to make a choice and permitted to make any choice they want, because they're not permitted to make any choice they want.
Yes, yeah.
But they are free to make the choices they want.
Right.
Our kids are free to throw a tantrum, but they're not necessarily permitted to, in the sense that it doesn't work for them.
Right. Yeah.
So we've never told our kids, you can't throw a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
We've asked them to maybe have their tantrum in a different room.
Sure. Yep.
But
remove yourself from here and continue. Yes.
But, and so we don't reward tantrums.
Right.
It doesn't, we make sure it doesn't ever work. That they're, we want our kids to know that there's a more excellent way of getting what they want.
Yeah.
And a tantrum will never work in our house. But all that to say, we have created an environment in our home where our kids know the expectations.
Mm-hmm.
They know the standards. They understand that they are free to make the choices they want to make.
Yeah.
And they're also free to experience whatever consequences come as a result of that choice.
Yep.
And that to me feels a lot like how God parents us.
Right.
As a father.
And it's painful as a parent when the kid makes the wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do not like having to carry out the, you know, the discipline on the other end of the wrong choice. Like, it is not a joy for me to see our kids suffering, even if it's over the silliest thing, you know, over like, I wanted that gummy and not this gummy, you know, like right now, those are some of the stakes that we're dealing with.
Yeah.
But like, it's still, it's not fun as the parent watching your kid suffer at whatever level they're suffering at.
Yeah.
And it's the same for the father. Like, he in no way set up this freedom with the intention of taking joy in our suffering.
Right.
He set up these choices in order to experience the true, real, genuine choice of love with people that he created for the purpose of love. And so he took that huge risk of creating us, knowing full well that it could go the opposite way that he wanted it to, but he loved us enough to say, I'm willing to take this risk in order to potentially receive your choice of yes to me.
Yeah.
And that is huge.
Yeah.
That just like, it's mind blowing when you think about it. Like, he could have done anything. He could have done anything he wanted. He could have put us here as little robots who had no choice but to love him and serve him. And we have zero idea that we have any other option. But he chose to give us the real experience of love, of being able to choose him. And how much more satisfying is that on both ends, to be able to say, yeah, I choose you, God. I choose to love you. And then him on the receiving end of having that reciprocated feeling of, yes, I chose you and I put you here and now you're choosing me. Yeah. That is just what it's all about.
Yeah, if he had created us without a will and the ability to choose, we couldn't ever have known love.
Right.
We couldn't have known what it is to receive love.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't have known what it is to give love.
Yeah, it's not gratifying at all if you try to force somebody into loving you.
Yeah. Well, it isn't love.
It isn't
That's
love.
The thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, like,
it isn't, no, you can't force someone into love because it isn't love. Yeah.
Yep.
There's the C.S. Lewis quote that I want to read. He said, God created things which had free will. That means creatures which can go wrong or right. Some people think they can imagine a creature which was free but had no possibility of going wrong. But I can't. If a thing is free to be good, it's also free to be bad. And free will is what has made evil possible. Why then did God give them free will? Because free will, though it makes evil possible, it is also the only thing that makes possible any love or goodness or joy worth having.
Mm.
And that's such a good way of putting
that
it.
That is a really good way of putting
it. That the freedom that we were born into is what creates the potential for things to go wrong.
Yeah.
But it's that it also creates the same potential for things to go right.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can't have one without the other.
Right.
And it gets complicated figuring out how exactly to navigate this with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the Bible does seem to put a high value on, like, obedience in kids.
Right.
But as far as I can tell, the only way to make a kid obey you is to create an environment in which their desire to be obedient naturally comes forth.
Yeah. And the thing is, also, I don't think that there is any accident in the father being called the father.
Yeah.
Like, if it was just left as God in the Bible, maybe we wouldn't draw as many connections to fathers and mothers on earth as we can with knowing him as Father God, with mm-hmm. Jesus saying Father, going to him saying Father, you know, like always addressing him that way. And so I think there it's not there by accident. And so naturally we're going to draw those connections between our parenting here mm-hmm. with God's parenting. And he parented in such a way as everything that we just talked about.
Yeah.
He gave us the choices. He gave us the ability to say yes or to say no to him. And so if we are wanting to model our parenting after any source, what better source than Father God himself?
Yeah. Reminds me when Jesus rose from the dead. And I think it was his conversation with Mary, if I'm remembering correctly. Mm. And he says, go and tell the other disciples that I'm going to my God and your God, to my Father and your Father.
Yeah.
And it was this revelatory moment that like everything that God is to me, he is to you.
Right.
He's not just my Father. He's your Father.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've done everything. I've bridged every gap that there is. I've defeated sin and I've defeated death. And now you have access fully to God as both your God and as your Father.
Right. And even the Lord's Prayer too. Yeah. He says, our Father. Mm-hmm. He's teaching the disciples how to pray. Yes. Our Father. He doesn't say, my Father, your God, who is in heaven. It's our Father.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. All righty. For anybody listening, we have a couple of favors to ask. First, if you are listening on any audio platform like Apple or Spotify, if you could do us a huge favor, and if you have found any value in our content, if you could leave us a good review, that's a very small thing you can do that helps us in a really big way. Also, if you are watching this on YouTube, if you could like this video and subscribe, that's also a very small thing you can do that helps us in a really big way. But I think that's going to be it for this episode.
All right.
Well, once again, my name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're making history. We'll see you next time.